Thursday, April 6th, the 2023 edition of Connecticut Today. Right here, you and I sitting down for that. We welcomed Only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi on the show to chat about the city's upcoming mayoral contest. Quinnipiac University Associate Journalism Professor Molly Yannity talked about the just-completed NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament and the implications for the WNBA, and I also had some thoughts on Governor Ned Lamont's comments regarding the city of Houston after the NCAA men's basketball tournament. What's going on in Bridgeport? Great blog site that's been up for years and years and years. So I figured it's a good time to have this gentleman back on WICC 600 AM 107.3 FM. Lenny Grimaldi to talk about stuff that's on onlyinbridgeport.com. Lenny, it's Paul here. How are you?
Hey, Paul, good to be with you. How you been?
Yeah, I've been good, Lenny, and great to have you back here on the station. Figured it was high time we did this. Well, so, Lenny, now I guess the big story is fundraising numbers. I know you've been highlighting. Looks like, Lenny, a pretty good haul for Joe Ganim. What's the update on this?
Yeah, well, you know, money is the mother's milk of politics. So, you know, Joe Ganim has been a tremendous fundraiser, you know, for decades. So him raising, you know, $320,000, going on to $400,000. It's not a revelation, but that's what Joe does. The mayor is a good fundraiser. Behind him, fundraising-wise, is John Gomes, a former Ganim administration official who really has overperformed, according to, you know, my viewpoint of politics and political operatives. He's raised, you know, a good amount of money to compete. And that's the thing. If you're an opponent to an incumbent mayor, you don't have to raise the same amount of money as he or she, but what is the number to compete? And so Gomes has raised enough money to compete, and we'll see how it shakes out in this mayoral cycle. It could be a big field, or it could end up being a small field, because you also have two other announced candidates, and it's State Senator Marilyn Moore and former Finch administration official Lamont Daniels. And I don't know the numbers they have raised, because they don't technically don't have to file their campaign finance reports until next week. But we'll see how that shakes out. And it's an important one, because if Lamont Daniels raises with Marilyn Moore, who came close in the Democratic primary against Joe Ganim 4 years ago, it's going to be a big setback for him, for her, and raise him up.
So project down the road a little here, Lenny. Let's say that Lamont Daniels and Senator Moore, for whatever reason, they don't have the support that they need going into the primary. Is there any way you see them saying, hey, this is not working for us, and then the jockeying begins between Mr. Gomes and the mayor to pick up that support or not? How could you see that playing out or not?
Well, right now it is playing out in a very clear picture in which a lot of the supporters that Marilyn Moore had in 2019 have gravitated to Lamont Daniels. And he's picking up, you know, what I get to call the progressive far left wing of the Democratic Party, because Marilyn Moore really hasn't inspired her. You know, Marilyn Moore is not a great political schmoozer. That's not her game. She doesn't do that. Right. In politics, it's really critical to maintain your relationships. And a lot of those relationships she had 4 years ago, they said, we want the new guy. Right. Because the new guys paid attention to them, because ultimately political operatives, they want to be involved. They want to be engaged. They want to be part of something. And Daniels has done a pretty good job at wooing over people who had supported her last time. We're talking about more inside players, not job queue citizen, but the people who can help you build an infrastructure to create an effective race. So he's actually poached a lot of her supporters. So if she doesn't have a good fundraising month, and we're not going to find out until really, you know, early next week sometime, it's going to really hurt her and elevate him.
And the guest is Lenny Grimaldi, onlyinbridgeport.com. Lenny, where's the stability of the mayor's support? Where is that coming from? Where it came from in the past or not?
Well, I think 4 years ago, in 2019, he came off, you know, that dubious run for governor. You know, people brought him back in 2015. It was an amazing comeback considering where he was. He decides to run for governor. It did not work out well. And so he didn't have as much as he has today to promote. to win another 4-year term. So he was damaged going into that mayoral run in 2019. I don't think he's a lock, but he's in much better shape than he was 4 years ago, because you have things like the amphitheater, right?
Yeah.
Downtown, you have the Honey Locust Square project in the East End. You have the Cherry Street Loft in the West End. You have Boys and Girls Club under construction in the North End. And you have a lot of new downtown housing. So he has a lot more to promote, to try to win another 4-year term with the voters. So, you know, it's a different Joe Ganim this time around. Again, he's not a lock, but he's in better shape than he was 4 years ago.
Lenny, the comings and goings and musings of the Bridgeport City Council, always entertaining. And just after a couple of meetings, we see that Sarah Smith is resigning from the council. What does your sense tell you about the state of the council right now, the power structure there, and what may or may not be happening in the immediate future with the city council?
Well, like the mayor, who's going out before the voters, all the 20 members of the city council as well, in that particular situation with Sarah Smith, a committee very involved. She's a city minister, very involved in social services programs. She decided to go on the council, and I think she ultimately decided she just had too much on her plate, and so did some of her board members. How do you juggle all these different responsibilities? So the council members, along with the mayor, are facing the voters again, and you're in the budget process right now. The mayor this week submitted his budget proposal to the city council. It's now in the hands of the Budget and Appropriations Committee, and that's where the rubber hits the road regarding city budget. So, you know, no one wants to raise taxes. Ganim submitted a budget no tax increase proposal.
Mm-hmm.
The city council is not going to raise taxes in election year. So then it becomes like, What can the opponents of Joe Ganim and city council members pick apart in the budget? Is it going to be education? Is it going to be other areas? So you're going to be hearing some blowback from some of the opponents to the mayor and potential city council candidates. You're going to pick that budget apart and see where they can make hay. It's all a work in progress.
Police Department, Lenny Grimaldi, with the new chief in, could we see an extended period, maybe finally, of some stability in the department? I mean, I know they have their recruitment issues, as a lot of big city departments do, but under the new chief, what do you foresee here? What are you hearing? Anything on that?
Right now, Chief Porter's been a godsend to the city because he's up front, he's active, he is this early term of being just on the job as chief, you know, for the last, you know, 3 or 4 months, he's very engaged. He's very accessible. Unlike Chief Rebecca Garcia, just didn't feel it was important to engage the community. And Chief Porter, on a regular basis, is either out in the community or doing a Facebook Live and saying, here's how we're running this police department. So there's an engagement between the police department, the police chief, and neighborhoods, I have not seen in my lifetime, you know, being around Bridgeport politics or being a part of it in 40 years. He's very engaging. He's super smart. People seem to like him. Again, this stuff's not the, you know, it's not the early haul. It's the long haul. But right now, the chief is off to a good start. And frankly, the chief is taking a lot of pressure off of the mayor's office. The last thing the mayor's office wants is to own the police department. That never works. Now, mayors don't want to be the police chief. And so what occurred under Garcia, often where when there was an issue in the police department, a lot of people went to the mayor's office, you know, be it community activists or news media to say, hey, what's going on here? Chief Porter, really is engaged and is very accessible. And he's being very accountable for how the department is run.
And Lenny, finally, I'm sure you, as millions of others did from afar, others did watch what happened earlier this week in Chicago, where the former head of the Bridgeport school system, Paul Vallis, Lenny, fell just a hair short of being elected the mayor of Chicago. Were you surprised at all that he ran? Did anything in that campaign surprise you?
Timing is right. You know, my former boss, Donald Trump, who I worked for 4 years, you know, he had the perfect situation when you go back to 2016. He had, a whole bunch of people in that race during the Republican primary process, carving up the traditional vote, right? And he started carving up these wins along the way, or piling up primary wins along the way. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden people go, holy cow, we'll have to deal with Trump now. With Vallis was the only white guy in the race. I think there was like, I don't know, 9 or 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had that opportunity to galvanize a certain component of the electorate. You know, he certainly earned his stripes as an education reformer. But once the dust was settled, he won that primary. You know, the person who finished second in the slot started galvanizing a lot of those other votes that went other places. So, yet Vallis came very, very close. A heck of a run. You know, Paul Vallis ran the city schools for a couple of years, and I got to know him, you know, a little bit. But ended up being a close race. But that's the situation. Primaries sometimes can be very different animals than runoffs. And this runoff, and his opponent managed to galvanize a lot of those votes that went elsewhere.
Lenny Grimaldi. Lenny, thanks. Only at Bridgeport.com. Lenny, we'll chat with you next week. Thank you, sir.
Can't wait. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it, Lenny. See you next week. All right. Back, we'll have Lenny on, hopefully every Thursday afternoon, 5:07, right here on WICC. All right, now everybody was wrapped up in March Madness with a UConn win, and that's great. Fifth national championship for the Husky men. But, man, we've got plenty of storylines coming out of the women's tournament. A huge television number for the women's tournament, the highest ever. Meantime, the men's tournament had their lowest number ever. And a little trash talking and some politics and what might this mean for the college game going forward. And the WNBA joining us right now is Quinnipiac University Associate Journalism Professor Molly Yannity, who comments on this sort of stuff and covers it all across the country. Molly, hi, it's Paul at WICC. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Boy, I got to tell you, man, did you ever think there'd be this many storylines coming out of the women's tournament? I mean, this thing, for whatever reason, Molly, is still top of the fold in a lot of areas.
It really is. But I'd hoped it would be. There are so many storylines going into it, so it's nice to see that a lot of the, you know, with television ratings and, you know, players saying they're going to the WNBA or not going to the WNBA and some transferring. Those are pretty cool storylines.
And listen, Molly, you and I both know, because we've been covering this stuff a lot, a little trash talking helps too, doesn't it? And I think, Molly,
sure
though, I think our brothers and sisters in the media, I think they kind of blew this whole thing between the two star players of LSU and Iowa. Did you think it was overblown a little? Because I sure did.
I definitely did. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was how the reporters on the ground, particularly the ESPN reporters, which are Rebecca Lobo and Ryan Rucco for mm-hmm. ESPN, really didn't say anything about it while it was going on. You know, they didn't say anything. They weren't commenting about it right there at the end of the game. But man, within moments, you know, social media blew up. So I'm not so much sure if at first that it was, you know, that I'd point to the media as the culprit here, as so much, you know, that kind of toxic space with social media. And then a lot of the media coverage after was about the response on social media and really pointing at some of that trash talk.
And it's almost like, Molly, I'm sitting there going, well, yeah, women trash talk too. I mean, you don't think this is highly competitive? I'm like, who are these people, like you said, on social media saying, oh, my God, oh, these women have been playing ball since they're 6 or 7 years old. You don't think the emotions are high in a national championship game? Again, Molly, I'm just kind of sitting there laughing at the whole thing. And like you said, all this social media stuff that I think, you know, made a mountain out of a molehill here.
I agree with you 100% on that. And it was just wild because we've got, you know, Caitlin Clark for Iowa, who's just, I mean, the last three games of the tournaments, we're talking Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four. I mean, she's scoring 40, 41, 30 points in the championship game. Angel Reese and that whole LSU team, I mean, by their coaches' admission, this is a team of big personalities, all different kinds of personalities. So there is a lot going on. And, I mean, entertainment value, through the roof. I think, you know, a lot of the stuff we see when we're looking at any athlete, particularly younger, I mean, these women are all 19, 20, the two that we're talking about that really were engaged in the trash talk. They're also emulating what they see, you know, big stars do. And when you're talking about bringing the money into the college game through the NIL deals, you know, they're looking to get into, you know, they're looking to get into sponsorship deals. And you know, the more people talk about it, for better or worse, the more that helps with that kind of stuff. So we can't disregard that.
Yeah. And now, you know, we're watching what happens with the WNBA here. And you know, Molly, a lot of people, and I say this on my show all the time, especially when the Brittany Griner thing was at its height. And thankfully that was resolved in the end. You know, a lot of women players can go overseas and play for a ton money more than they can play here, even with endorsements. In the WNBA, do you see that changing now at all? Because I don't think a lot of folks here, Molly, understand how much bigger women's pro basketball is in other countries and other continents.
Right. I think that we are going to see more money invested in the WNBA. I don't think it's going to be, you know, someone's going to wave a wand and they're all going to be, you know, flying charter jets and making million-dollar deals. That season is still short. There's an expectation of, you know, fans and what they're paying, you know, for season tickets or single game tickets. But I do think that we're going to start to see the investment ramp up. And we kind of already are. I mean, Seattle's ownership group, which obviously there's not a Seattle NBA team, so it's an independent ownership group. They just poured some big money into a practice facility and broke ground on it. You know, there's the billionaire owner of the Brooklyn Nets. They put together the New York Liberty team playing at the Barclays Center, same arena. They're pouring some money into there with a kind of put together a super team, right? You've got Davis in Las Vegas, who's also, you know, has a lot of money in a practice facility. So I definitely think that we're going to see. But you know, like the thing is though, is that it's this kind of chicken and egg thing. There's investment poured into it. The athletes are better, stronger, bigger personalities. And when that happens, you're going to see, you know, some of that trash talk stuff. The media talks about it all over social media. And then, hey, look at that product. We're going to invest money in it. So it's definitely a chicken and egg thing that for me as a lifelong women's sports fan is very cool to see.
Excellent. Molly Annity, thank you. Quinnipiac University Associate Journalism Professor Molly Annity with her thoughts on what is going to happen now post the Women's March Madness. Molly, good to talk to you. We'll chat down the road. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. There you go. What's that? What's that old rule or the one of the rules we try and live by, that the boss, the guy or the gal on top? You know, you have the pyramid of a company, and up at the top where you have that top angle of the pyramid, there's the boss. There's the guy who is, whether you like it or not, he's the face of the company. And some bosses are more well-known than others. Jack Welch, Bob Iger, you know, different corporate bosses that we've seen over the years, Mark Cuban, people like that. So a lot of times people say the company or the firm or the corporation takes on the personality of the boss. Well, hopefully, after comments Governor Ned Lamont made that I guess he thought were funny. Yeah. I guess Ned thought he was being funny. And he is now embarrassed us, maybe. Now, I know what you're going to say. He was trying to be funny. Now, usually, trying to be funny only works if you're actually funny. There's a little thing there. You know, it's like people who get high and they say, yeah, you know, dude, when I'm high, I'm more creative. No, you're not. You're high. You think you're more creative. You think you're funny when you're actually not. So what are we talking about here? And again, the reason I bring this up, and you may say, well, what are you starting with this for? No, there's a big lesson here. People from the Northeast are considered arrogant. They're considered jerks. They may be nice people, but I've done a little bit of traveling in my life throughout the country, mainly doing hockey play-by-play and stuff like that. And where are you from? Oh, yeah, yeah. And I get to other parts of the country. I get to the South. I get to the Midwest. I turn around and say, wow, this is kind of nice. Nobody's a jackass, like at home. So Governor Ned Lamont, God bless his soul, and you know that I say good things about the governor when I think he does really good things sometimes with the economy of this state. And then other times, I'll call him or anybody else out if I think they're being idiots. So he went on a couple of radio programs, including Chaz and AJ, our good brothers here at Connoisseur Media from 99.1 PLR, and he was asked on Chaz and AJ and on a station up in Hartford, hey, what did you think about Houston? How was your trip to Houston for the men's Final Four? And he was asked by the station in Hartford, and here, Chaz and AJ, what did you think of the city of Houston? The whole city or whatever, however the governor said. Now, most of us would say, if we're going to a city like Houston, which is not exactly Mayberry, okay, Houston is a pretty big, rich, thriving city in Texas. Texas, of course, being one of the states the people in Connecticut escape to. People in Connecticut generally leave to live in... Nobody leaves Connecticut to go to live in Michigan. They leave Connecticut to go to live in Florida. Texas. What? Eric's laughing. Why? When's the last time you heard somebody say, me and the wife, we can't wait now, we're retired, we're going to retire in Michigan or New Jersey. It doesn't happen. You go to Florida, the Carolinas, or Texas, generally. I have a relative of mine that just retired to Nashville. That's the new hotspot now on the East Coast, Nashville. But I digress. So the mayor calls the city of Houston butt ugly. Okay, the governor, rather, I'm sorry. Now, was he trying to be funny? I guess he was trying to be funny. But people in Houston and around the country see that, even though it was said on one of our sister stations here at Connoisseur and up in Harvard, they say, yeah, the governor, maybe he's trying to be funny. Now, some people will say that. Other people will say, God, what a jerk. What an absolute jerk. And there's been a lot of response about this. One of the best responses that I read, and we'll have a little piece of audio from the mayor of Houston here, who was not happy with that, and a good zinger from Ted Cruz. Robert Ford is the play-by-play radio guy for the Houston Astros, and you may listen online or listen on satellite radio. Robert Ford is one of the guys that carries the flag for the city of Houston all throughout the Astros' run. And Robert Ford heard what Ned Lamont said, and Ford tweeted out, "That's rich, coming from someone who lives in Hartford." Thank you, Robert. He's got a point there. People look back at us, at Connecticut, maybe by hearing what, you know, the governor said, and they're like, "Excuse me? You live in Connecticut." Now, to people in another part of the country, Connecticut is largely where you stop to go to the bathroom on the way from between New York and Boston. It just is. I'm sorry. I know people don't like that, but it just is. And stuff that the governor said didn't help it any. They went to Sylvester Turner, the mayor of Houston. He wasn't real happy with old Ned's attempt at humor there.
I said, oh, no, hell no. No, you're not going to come and talk to me. We're not going to feed you, dine you, host you, house you, clean up after you. And then you win, and you're going to go back and talk about butt ugly? Which end was he looking from?
All right, there's Mayor Sylvester Turner there at Houston. He's not happy either. Look, in the grand scheme of things, let me go back to my original point here. In the grand scheme of things, this was Ned's attempt, I guess, at trying to be funny. But it's sad. I don't know why he did this, but here's the thing. And I was talking about this with somebody in the front office before the show here today. He's got a propensity to do this. Think back, whenever anything is in the news, and a reporter asks the governor, and I've kind of noticed this over the years, and as much as I think he's got his head right on his shoulders when it comes to the economic stuff of the state, some of the stuff, he just falls into this uber-leftist mantra here. You do notice sometimes when Ned Lamont is asked about things in other states, if he's asked about something in Florida, for example, or something in Texas, or something in North Carolina, or South Carolina, or Tennessee, or the Dakotas, or Oklahoma, or the Midwest, he becomes very dismissive. And again, maybe he's... maybe he thinks it's funny. I don't know. But this time around was just flat embarrassing. It was just flat embarrassing. Now, he's trying to walk this back. All right? The governor's trying to walk this back because I'm sure he got home and his press people are saying, Governor? Yeah? That didn't come over as funny. So now... Ned's trying to walk this back. But listen to this. He doesn't actually apologize.
I love the mayor's comments. He said maybe the governor is looking at the wrong end of a beautiful horse.
No, the wrong end of a beautiful horse? Okay, Ned.
We had a ball in Houston during the NCAA Final Four.
Well, I would hope you did. The team won.
The people there were incredibly gracious and welcoming for us, and the basketball game was pretty darn good as well.
Okay, but do you still think the city is butt ugly? You didn't really address that, Ned, did you? See, he's got a propensity for this. He always does this if it's anything to do with Texas, the Carolinas, or Florida. He gets this twitching about you can never say anything nice about a red state. Don't believe me. Google the stuff he said whenever it comes to jobs or anything. Ted Cruz got a pretty good... Now, you may like Ted Cruz, you may not. Ted Cruz got a pretty good zinger here in toward the governor here before we take a break and get your calls on this. Ted Cruz tweeted to Ned Lamont, pretty funny, "Must be hard to see so many good jobs for blue-collar workers." Which is true. I mean, so many businesses are flocking to Texas now. Tesla did. Other businesses leaving California. You know, some businesses leaving the Northeast. Is this embarrassing to you? What are your thoughts on this? And again, I understand he may have tried. He was trying to be funny. He was trying to be wacky. I understand he was trying to be a little nutty. But to me, this just came over as bad, didn't it? Is there a Northeast arrogance? That's the whole thing, this Northeast arrogance. It doesn't mean you can't like the Northeast. Doesn't mean we don't love Connecticut. Doesn't mean we don't love Boston, New York, or whatever. But when you get to other parts of the country, you know, they do look at us as well. You remember when the New England Patriots, there was that thing during the rolling years where they were going to kind of come here and relocate and put a stadium in downtown Hartford. That was kind of alluring, and Bob Kraft was doing that just to get the new stadium in Foxborough. Well, some writer in Boston, it might have been Will McDonough, one of the legendary sports writers, Dan Shaughnessy, one of those guys. He said something to the effect of, there's no way the NFL is going to relocate a franchise in America's filing cabinet, which, of course, was a reference to Hartford. So what is the perception of Connecticut around the country? Do we have a perception? Or are we, is what the governor said in an attempt at being funny, is that actually kind of a snippet in a funny attempt? Is that actually kind of a snippet of a reality that people look at the Northeast as just a bunch of arrogant jerks? So, you know what, in a roundabout way, shame on the governor here. I mean, I know he was trying to be funny, but why couldn't he have just said on the station in Hartford and here on PLR down the hall, why couldn't he have just said, hey, Houston's great, great, beautiful American city, but ugly? Is that how he represents the people of Connecticut around the country? That'd be pretty sad.